strong in the ball, who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017, is officially Tiger Time.
We never wait until the last one.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And was that fun?
I really enjoyed it, actually.
It did feel a little bit like drowning puppies in the second half.
Well, not the second half. It felt like drowning puppies in the second quarter. In the third quarter, the puppies fought back.
Yeah, but it's kind of stopped being fun, at least in the first half. It was sort of shiny and zinging around, and, you know, we had a new player, and Shai Bolton was in the middle, and yeah, it was kind of fun. I've really felt so unenthused about watching the second half of a replay of a game that we've won by a considerable margin before.
Yeah, look, I think it's often like that when you get out to a big lead at halftime, that sort of anything less than a 200-goal win becomes an anticlimax. Sorry, 200-point win becomes an anticlimax. And I think that's what happened, but fortunately, I have to confess, Nick, somewhat anticipating it wouldn't be a great game, that I went to a craft beer festival instead and watched the game on replay. And with the benefit of hindsight, I thoroughly enjoyed the game because I got what I wanted from it. A big win, and key performances from our players I consider very important for our future.
Yeah, when you zoom out to the big picture, it certainly was fun. The debut game for Derek Egomezi-Smith, the proper debut of Shai Bolton as gun midfielder, and flashes of Sydney Stack in the midfield. There were lots of fun things about the game.
But I'm going to wind it up. Basic first principles, Nick. Cochin looked good.
Cochin did look good.
Not a guy wearing number 9 who physically resembled Trent Cochin. He looked like good Trent Cochin. And that, and Prestia, him and Prestia kicking a goal from 55 metres looking as fit as he ever had in a Richmond uniform, those two things alone, they were worth the price of admission for me.
That's true. Tom Lynch looked reasonably frisky in a game where he had a fair bit of publicity.
He looked okay. Let's not...
No, that's true. He wasn't on a great opponent. I remain absolutely convinced that we need to move the Suns to Hobart and either have them having the most incongruous nickname since the Utah Jazz, or perhaps rename them. But yeah.
Yeah, look, I'm not defending the Suns. I think there's a little bit of, as you're a born-again Tasmanian, there's a little bit of bias. I think we'll find that Tasmania might be not quite the... There will be problems with the Tasmanian team, but there's problems with the Suns team.
Yes, but there is my particular background of having done quite a lot of podcasting about the A-League for the slow-moving disaster that was Gold Coast United, which was, I think, only the third of 5 professional sports franchises that have failed on the Gold Coast in the last 2 decades. I just start from a really negative place.
I think you make a good point about that. I think
have they progressed at all?
No, and actually, it was a point you made last week about the Saints and the Suns. That was just awful from their perspective. Like a game they actually had a reason to show a bit of heart. You know, playing against Lynch, they got Miles playing. You know, that Miles presumably told them all our tactics, and they were just awful. just yep. completely without heart. Like, that was a terrible, terrible game for them. Like, I don't want to go on. But since it's not going to be a great game to analyse, I will say I think perhaps there are a few people who know the flaws with the possible Tasmanian team that have been quiet because they don't want to get howled down. Yes, that would be challenging too, but God, this Suns team, it's bad, and I've felt really sorry for Stuart Dew. But back to Richmond. Look, you can only beat who you play in front of us, and I believe we made the biggest win against the Suns all year. So it's not like
no, they have been competitive in quite a few games,
particularly at Metricon.
Yes, particularly at Metricon, and on a wet day, I think that the ball handling with the slippery pill was, yeah, that was pretty good fun.
Yeah, the class showed.
Mm. Are you thinking in particular of Sydney Stack running at 80% disposal efficiency as a forward?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just sort of like, you know, Sydney Stack just must be saying to his teammates, "Hey, mate, this stuff is easy. What's wrong with you?" You know,
get on board.
Actually, there was a moment in the centre square where he did win the centre square clearance. Oh no, sorry, someone else won the centre clearance because it goes to the person who touched it first. But he was sort of the second man in the link, and he semi fumbled it before he gathered it and gave it to a teammate. And it was almost a shock that he didn't do something perfectly.
Mm. Well, he had zero turnovers on the game, on the day, which is, it's pretty remarkable.
It is, but Nick, one of the first things that stood out to me about the game was George just started out the game absolutely on fire.
I know. Cooking. Oh my God, I was actually frustrated about that, but where was this in the games where we needed it?
It did feel that way, didn't it? First thing I thought of you was he was just on. Like, fortunately, he finally missed a shot. But yeah, he started hot, didn't he?
Oh, he did. I mean, the whole team started hot, and it felt like we were jagging them from everywhere. But yeah, oh George, he's a truly unique presence. Kane Lambert's goal kicking, on the other hand, brought no such twinge of remorse. That was just really fun.
Now, I believe he's now, I think we'll come back to this issue, but I believe he's now in the AFL Team of the Year.
Mm, he is back in, despite having missed a few games. He's back there.
Such an important in.
Along with Shane Edwards and Sydney Stack.
Yes. And before we get just a little bit more on Sydney Stack, and Trent Conchon made the Team of the Week, which, again, I believe he hasn't made all year. I know it's against the Suns, but they have good young midfielders. I was very excited by Cochin's game, to reiterate.
Yeah, he was hunting. It was fun. Speaking of the AFL Team of the Week, Shai Bolton was there again. Sadly, he wasn't on the Friday night or Saturday night Channel 7 game, so he's ineligible for the Rising Star this week. But he kind of blew up the AFL ratings. He was in the top 5 of all players in the AFL for this weekend.
Nick, did you notice who he beat for the first the goal of the game? His first goal in a contested marking situation?
Oh, no, I didn't.
It was Lukosius.
Yeah, who's 195 centimetres tall.
And what, number 2 pick in the draft?
Yep.
That was sweet. He is, I mean, regular listeners to the podcast will know is that I bought personal seat licences on the front row of the Shai Bolton bandwagon. He's good. When he's on...
Yep.
Yeah, he can win a lot of games. Like, I know he's frustrating, and he might lose you a final too by having 5 touches, but he could win you a final.
Yep. So what was it? The most disposals in a number 29 Guernsey since Jason Tawney from friend of the podcast, Simon Wallace?
Yeah, that's a great player, Jason Tawney.
Yeah, 29 disposals, nearly 500 metres gained, clearances, tackles, goals. It was pretty fun.
Yep, but yeah, the any game where, well, actually 26 according to Footy Wire. I don't know what the I've seen 29 elsewhere. Any time Shire's getting more than 20, you're in with a red hot chance to win the game.
Yeah. How did you enjoy his work as a midfielder?
It's good. You know, let's see it with against a bigger midfield, but
Yeah, that was my thought as well. He's like, it was super exciting seeing guys like Stack and Bolton rotate through midfield, but they are small.
Yeah, I agree.
There's going to be teams with bigger midfields, including this week. So.
There's no doubt the Chole, Stack, Bolton. Who else was in there? Was it Shedder or Lambert? That is a very exciting midfield rotation. But yes, bit lacking in experience and bulk.
Yeah, how is the Mabia Chole ruck experiment working for you?
Well, Nick, this is just the I'm just going to basically read verbatim from my notes from the game. Chole's first two taps, beautiful jump, then next contest jumped out of the way.
Yep.
He's getting
better. I think he's looking the ruck contests that make you wince are becoming less frequent.
Hmm. I hope you're right.
Well, Jared Witz is 6'10" and close to the best tap ruckman in AFL, and he was competitive. Like, that was...
Yeah, look
that was pretty good.
Basically, if the ball's over the other ruckman's head, Mabia Chole's almost above average already as a ruckman. It's when it's going to be a 50-50 contest or it's over his head, bad things happen.
Yeah, he's not good to adjusting to the ball. But when he's got a clean run and jump at it, yeah, it's pretty good fun.
Yeah, I think, well, yes, there's the adjusting the ball, but it's also the, because when the ball's over your head, that means the other ruckman's going to crush into you when you jump, and he doesn't like that very much. But, you know, there's a lot going on. By the way, Nick, just not really to bag Mabia Chole, but just to make an interesting point about the game. So Mabia Chole was the bottom ranked Richmond player for the game.
Oh, I noticed this as well. Yeah, come on.
And did you notice how many Suns were ranked below him?
Yes, I did actually. It was 10.
Yes, oh, I just counted 11.
yeah, half the team. So
yeah,
he,
you're right, wasn't.
He wasn't. Like, he was our worst player, and he wasn't bad. Like,
yeah, he was okay. He was respectable.
Some nice things about his game.
Yeah. He was perfect. That's perfect. Where he was ranked, the amount of points he scored is perfectly acceptable for a second ruck.
Especially given his time on the ground. Yeah, that's just fine.
And guess who was our fourth worst player?
Oh, no, I don't know.
Dusty.
Huh.
Which, there again, I take as a really good sign, is you win by 95 points and Dusty does sweet FA.
Dusty was cruising, it's fair to say. He had 4 goal assists, which is a pretty big number.
Yeah, I don't particularly rate goal assists as a stat. I think it's too random variable. But I hear what you say. But, you know, just to go back to the point of the... So there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10... 10 players who had plus 20 possessions for Richmond on the game, and not one of them was Dusty.
Yeah, it was pretty good fun.
Yeah, it was just a solid, very solid team effort.
We already mentioned about George. He led the team in score involvements.
Wow. Yeah, well, it does look, in fairness, it does have an influence when so many of them are yourselves. Yeah, he had seven. Yeah, he had true. 7 personal scores. So yeah, I think he had 12 or 11 score involvements overall. So you know, a little bit of a 12. So a little bit of a bias sample, but yeah, look, it's incredibly influential. Also, went at 90%.
Yeah. Oh, look, it was such a fun game. And we had very few passengers. You know, nobody talked about
it. I think we've just established we had no passengers.
We just established that. Yeah, the Dion Prestia revenge game that nobody talked about.
Oh, Yeah, I love Dion Preston. I think I mentioned this before. He just looks so fit. Finally looked like the kind of guy you give up a top 10 draft pick for. He just looked awesome.
Oh, look, I think he's been there for a while. Yeah.
This year?
Certainly the last 6 weeks. Yeah, and then there was that whole the most important 4 weeks of our lives.
Don't get me wrong, you know.
He's quite good then too.
Everyone's got a sprinkle of magic dust from that, but like he actually, like you know, let's be honest, he was just even at his best in those games, he was just sort of he was the fourth or third, you know, he was probably the fourth best mid on that team. But he's looking really good. Like
he's looking very good. Random statistical note for you. Can you guess who was second on the team in intercept possessions?
I was abroad.
Eric Eglemasi-Smith.
Oh, yeah. So I was going to come to him. You know, he did third a two-handed bounce.
Yeah. He was fifth on the team for meters gained as well. And he got his first disposal off a kick-out. That's quite the vote of confidence.
Yeah. You know, we discussed on this podcast before that I always thought in his use of the ball, at least, he looked AFL-y. Just in the VFL, he looked composed and sort of had time, which is what you need to do in the AFL. So, I don't mean... It wasn't a huge shock to me that he was quite competent in that game. I guess the interesting thing will be is in a game where our backline's under more pressure, which hopefully he'll get another game this week, how he goes. But, I mean, as you've already pointed out, at the top of the show, it was a very competent debut.
It was, and I wouldn't mind just taking a moment to... Like, there's been a fair bit of talk about, you know, he's the first academy player, and what an achievement that is. Like, for... Those of us who follow junior football, this really was an achievement. It wasn't a Sydney Stack situation where, you know, All Australian under 18 gets overlooked because of, you know, some major off-field concerns. Like, he just wasn't on the radar. He was not good enough as a 18-year-old playing in the under 18s. His performance. Track record. He had some athletic traits. He was a decent size, but he just wasn't good enough. And he came back in his 19th year, had some solid games as a 23rd player in our VFL team. Took a chance on him as a Category B rookie. Has a season ruined to injury, and comes out this year, and he's a much better player. Like it is a credit to him, and it is a credit to the development staff in the VFL program, because he has come from a long way back to make this debut. And yeah, credit to them.
And what his promotion has effectively done has allowed us to play Sydney Stack, who has become our wild card, in the position on the ground where he's most dangerous.
Really? The position on the ground where he is most dangerous is on the field. Seriously.
Yes. No, but seriously, you know, I mean, being dangerous.
There is no point to the ground where I'm not happy to see Sydney's tag there.
Yes. But you know what I mean. Winning exceptional one-on-one contests is more valuable in the forward. A lot of guys can kill a contest in the back line. Sydney Stack... you know, it's only 2-game sample size, and they were against mediocre teams. He's looking really excited in the forward line, like a real difference maker, and that is more valuable than a difference maker in the back pocket.
I'm becoming more and more convinced that he's a midfielder. I mean, I kind of was already learning that.
In the long run, yeah, I hear.
I'm thinking the long run is shorter, shorter than I was expecting.
Okay, so you're in the Nick world, the Sydney Stack is in late September. Sydney Stack is lining up in the midfield. In 2019,
perhaps not 2019, but I think in 2020 he's taking regular turns in midfield. And that makes me happy in ways that I can barely articulate.
Yeah, and actually is a need on our team, so...
Yep. Two players who didn't have exceptional games, but it's good to mention because they both re-signed for 2 years, was Camden McIntosh and Dave Asprey.
Yeah. Insert usual comment about not putting the value of contracts, so yeah, it's hard to analyse them. But yeah, I was happy. I don't think either of us were surprised by these re-signings, were they?
Not in the slightest. I think, you know, Dave Asprey is 28, contract extension that takes him to age 30 season, just fine. K-Mac is a solid but not far from exceptional player. That's fine.
Yeah, they're both
two years is right.
They're both players who aren't other teams are going to respect, but aren't going to talk themselves into Godfather offers. It just makes sense the way the tax bracket they're on and the current situation they're in, which is, let's face it, is an extremely good one for both of them. The coaching staff are very good at maximising both their talent. It's hard to imagine that any teams they're going to find a better situation than the one they're in, which is great because I'm very fond of them both. Even Dave Asprey, who's, you know, I know is a subject of some consternation occasionally in Richmond fans, and there is the down the line Dave nickname, but that aside, I'm deeply fond of both of them. And I was actually, just before we came on air, I was watching the club's highlights of Dave Asprey, and I do remember his debut goal very, very well.
Oh, yeah. I think didn't he kick three on debut?
He certainly did. He played in the forward line.
Against Melbourne. Yeah. Here we go. Nice. Yeah, I'm glad we've got him, not least because, we really don't have that much depth. Like, Ryan Garthwaite missed pretty much the whole preseason and had a reasonably tough season.
Coaching staff love him, apparently.
Good, yeah. And look, he's got a huge work rate, I think, and I think that's a good place to start, and a defender's instincts. I think the physical development is going to come. Noah Bolter's injured, which is a bit annoying, which compromises the already lack of depth. So, we need Dave. I'm happy to have him.
Yeah. It's really hard to give up a premiership hero. Like once they're there, you want a really good reason to move off them.
Mm. Anyone else take your fancy?
Just point out Broad had quite a few intercept disposals and, you know, by the stats had a better than average game. But, yeah, you know, I think it was a game a lot of guys were very solid, including Jack Brett Graham was comfortable in the 20s again. I think, to me, the most exciting story was actually some of the veterans looking really good.
Mm. Yeah, Shai Bolton, pretty high. Pretty high on the list.
That's true, but weirdly I sort of expected it because I'm so on the Shai Bolton bandwagon.
Really?
Good point.
There we go. It was a rare disappointing round for our other teams.
Yeah, they just sucked. The VFL team just sucked, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And the VFLW team had their first loss. It was less fun.
Mm.
So the stitched up by Footscray and both of them, which is, yeah, that's pretty annoying.
Yeah, but sort of interesting point, Baker, great piece by Conrad Marshall last week. Actually, have you had a chance to read?
I have, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty much read. I reckon Conrad's pretty much compulsory reading.
I found it really interesting because he talked about how explain some of the things. You know, we've talked on the podcast before how about Baker will just mysteriously stop sometimes when he's chasing, and sort of talk through that he's not a natural pressure forward. He's sort of an in-betweener, and he does put on pressure, but he sometimes just forgets. It talked through his thought process as a footballer, and I just found it really interesting. Explain some of the things that we saw, like, you know, you can make debates about what they're better at, but there is no doubt Rioli is a more determined chaser than Baker is. And, you know, it sort of goes through that, and also why Baker's good at certain things. But anyway, he went back this week. Makes a lot of sense because obviously our forward line stacked, small forward line, and he got 29.
So to speak.
Yeah, nice one. 29 disposals, second best on ground in the back line.
Mm. Yeah, six tackles. The question for Baker in defence would be,
who's he playing?
Does he get nasty matchups on really quick dudes? But yeah, I'm really pleased to see him play well. I'm intrigued by Comrade Markov playing well
forward
as a forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
As the AFL's fastest man.
Yeah, and that was interesting. We'll see how it goes across in the next few weeks. I think Higo was just sort of what you'd expect from Higo, 21 disposals, one goal.
He was good. I liked Callum Coleman-Jones's game. 16 disposals, made the best, had a goal, 7 tackles. Like, I think he got beaten in hit-outs, but I think that's a really well-rounded game for a ruckman. And 3 contested marks. That's sort of the future of the good Callum Coleman-Jones in the seniors. So,
I think in no way, especially if we're playing Bolter as a back, you know, like, who knows what Marbia Chol will be doing in 2 years.
And look, he's going well at the moment, but and look, his VFL form was less inconsistent this year, but he didn't knock the door down, so it's a good thing for the club.
It's a good thing for 2020 for the club.
Noah Bolter sadly injured early. Riley Collard-Yorkin sadly not in form at all. I think Nation Butler, going okay, but not great. It's probably Higgins and Baker, I think, are the two that are closest to senior selection on form.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And basically, you can play them on more positions, but I don't think there's a real issue with, you know, Higgins. If depending on how fit Caddy is, and you start to think about who else is coming back in the team in the next few weeks, if Jack's fit, it's going to be really hard for some of these guys to get picked.
If you just look, I'm kind of okay with that if a full strength team, Richmond team, looks like the one on the weekend did. But
I mean, do you want to talk about selection briefly now?
Well, so Jack's apparently back. Unclear on Caddy. Couple of guys getting close. Nanks a couple of weeks away. Pickett's 2 to 3 weeks away. That'd be pretty fun.
Would be.
In the VFL, but...
Yeah. So the question I have with... So, like, obviously Nank comes straight in for Solder. Done. Easy. Yeah. As long as he's fit. With Jack, it's not easy. Like, do you drop the second ruck? Because you don't really want a guy who's just out of PCL doing the second ruck duties.
You don't.
Does that mean you drop a small forward? And which is all of them playing really well. And because even in the existing group, you've got to find space for Caddy, who, when he's fit, is, you know, clearly best 18. Mm. It's a really tough call.
That is not easy. You know, if Caddy hadn't been out of the side injured previously on form, I actually would have thought that she might have been in the pump.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we mentioned that
last week.
It's going to be some really tough decisions.
Anything about the AFLW?
Oh, look, I'm glad it wasn't the... I'm glad it was the VFLW rather than the AFLW.
Sorry, yes, good point.
Kicking 2 goals 10 would have driven me nuts.
Yeah.
So, having 4 more scoring shots and losing. Look, it's hard to take a ton away from the game. I like each week to pick out somebody who is in good form, particularly if I think they're a chance to be signed. And I reckon the Alec McCurr. I think Chot, another Sudanese player, centre-half back. She's in pretty good form.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she's a pretty good chance to get signed. Sadly, no Katie Brennan. Oh, no, Katie Brennan did play. Not quite at the same level of influence against her old team. We saw the debut of Sabrina Frederick as a key forward. And, yeah, my, she is a power forward. Also, don't think she's close to full fitness yet.
Yes, but, I think it's a good thing it's 6 months till the start of the season.
Yeah, yeah. And, look, she, you know, in interviews, she talked about how happy she is to be in the program. Yeah, I think she's the kind of player. Get her fit, get her motivated. She'll have a good year.
Yes.
GWS.
Yeah.
They're a pretty good team.
Hmm.
Thankfully, with some fairly key outs, because and I think we're 14-point favourites now, which I find slightly disconcerting. Yeah, so what really worries me about GWS is they've got the biggest, scariest forward line in the AFL, which is I don't think we quite saw coming. I mean, Jeremy Cameron has been excellent, and unfortunately hasn't had any of the injury or suspension problems he's had in previous seasons, but Finlayson is big and mobile and athletic. Himmelberg's quick, good defensively. Yeah, also a good size. They've got Brett Dimaggio. He's mildly dangerous as a half forward, and Toby Green's good. Their forward line's a problem.
Yeah, and you haven't even mentioned their best player. Jeremy Cameron.
Oh, no. Oh, I thought I mentioned Cameron at the start.
Oh, sorry. Anyway, well, leaving Coleman.
And 3.5 marks inside 50 a game. Yeah.
Destroyed us.
Just killed us last time. So, look, we'll have a much better back line than we did last time, but our back line has looked vulnerable at times.
I hate this team. They're so talented. They've always been so talented. It's always a mystery to me why they don't win more games.
They're thinner than previous versions, and with Kelly out injured, the midfield doesn't bat as deep. Hopper's pretty good. It'd be ideal with Canelio's out as well. But yeah, that would be a lot less.
And hopefully at the G we manage the angles better. We get the second man up in the marking contest. Like we shut down their forwards. Because as you pointed out before, we tend to trade wins depending on who's home.
Yeah, and for a team with a lot of athleticism, they don't play all that well on the MCG, thankfully. So yeah, 14 point line still seems generous though.
Yeah, I'm okay with it, but just, Nick, how big is this game?
Oh, it's huge. Like, it feels like if we win, it really opens the season up. And we don't leave the MCG for the rest of the season. Yeah. Like, we are 15 games into the season, and we've played at the MCG 6 times. So we've played at Marvel nearly as often as we have the MCG. And that is not a good thing.
Yeah, it's time to make a statement. That's our home ground.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
For the strong and the bold who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years, this one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond, our premiers, 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017.
It's just a celebration of all good things Richmond right now.
Come from that way.
Alex Rance.
Never not going to go, was he? Was he?
Pick up from Cotchin. Left foot snap. The goal of the game.
doing something fantastic, and we're just going to keep riding away.
Rudiger in the premiership, Jack! Jack, you're going to be a premiership player!
Oh, mate, I'm playing trouble. Why don't play the game?
So Tiger Land, a fighting field into in Tiger.
Rich man, get there first.
In any valley, you'll see us with the wind. Risking head and skin.